I call this meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Commissioner Carroll, may we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Lowe?
Here.
Commissioner Stanton?
Here.
Commissioner Burns?
Here.
Commissioner McMahon?
Present.
I'm here. Commissioner Galway-Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Placer?
Here.
Commissioner Kimball?
Here.
Commissioner Wilson? We have eight. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Are there any changes or adjustments to the agenda tonight, Mr. Zinner?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Do I have a motion? Move to approve by Commissioner McMahon. Second?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Lowe. Thumbs up approval on the agenda. Unanimous. Thank you very much. A copy of the October 20th, 2022 regular meeting minutes was attached to the agenda. Are there any changes or adjustments to the minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Thumbs up approval on the minutes. Unanimous with one abstention. Thank you very much. Moving on as soon as we are ready. Good? Okay. Our first case for tonight is a subdivision case, case number 234-2022. A request by Engineering Surveys and Services on behalf of SAP Holdings, LLC, seeking approval of a two-lot final plat containing 19.05 acres. The unimproved site is currently zoned A, agriculture, and is located northeast of the US 63 and Paris Road interchange and contains the addresses 4150 Paris Road and 3501 Hinkson Creek Road. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Public notice of this request is given last month on the 24th of October. Sent out 10 postcards. Did receive a phone call from representative of a property owner to the south stating general concern with access to Hinkson Creek Road. I believe they're also here this evening as well and may speak later on for more detail. And to familiarize myself with the site, this is identified here in red, northeast of the 63 and Paris Road interchange. It's a heavily wooded, zoned agriculture, and you can see the various fields and pastures to the east, along with Paris Road going through 63, and more industrial or commercial uses along this corridor. This case was the subject of a previous request earlier this year. It was actually three cases for a rezoning to MC, a conditional use permit for a travel trailer park, and a one-lot plat. Those cases were withdrawn during the March 10th Planning and Zoning public hearing. For history on this site, it was annexed into the city and assigned agriculture zoning in 1969, and that zoning has remained. The site does have several natural features. It's a heavily wooded area, contains a blue line stream, a floodway, floodplain. There's a floodplain overlay zoning overlaid on part of this as well. And part of this site does contain steep slopes up to 50% grade. Here's the plat in question. The main difference between this and the previous one is just the previous plat that was proposed was a one-lot final plat. This has changed to a two-lot final plat, generally delineated along the stream corridor. The site consists of two unplatted tracks. They're platting this two-lot plat with the southeast lot, identified as lot number two, as not for development. There's a stream buffer on the site that separates the developable portion of the property from the low-lying floodplain to the southeast. And the plat dedicates a standard 10-foot utility easement and right-of-way for Hinkson Creek Road, where no additional right-of-way is needed for Route B. Sidewalk would be required on Hinkson Creek Road, but is already in place on Route B. The site is within the urban services area, but as I mentioned, Lot 2 is noted as not for development with a note, and sanitary sewer is not being extended to Lot 2. Also on the plat, there's controlled access along here, and there's a portion of the plat that identifies a point of access that is pre-approved per MoDOT. However, final approval will require a MoDOT right-of-way permit. With that, staff is recommending approval of the requested final minor plat to be known as SAP subdivision, as it is compliant with the UDC. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Before we get to questions of staff, do any commissioners have additional information they've received from outside sources they would like to share with the commission at this time? Very good. Questions for staff? Seeing none. I can ask for public comment. This isn't technically a public hearing, right?
Correct.
Right. Is there anyone here who'd like to comment on this subdivision case? Seeing none? Oh, come on. Please state your name and address for the record. Speak directly into the mic, all that.
Fred Carose, Engineering Surveys and Services, 1113 Fay Street, Columbia, Missouri. I'm just here to answer any questions, if there are any. That's all I'm here for.
Very good. Any questions for the speaker? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here tonight. Come on. Again, name and address.
Don Stamper, and I live in Columbia's beautiful Second Ward. I prefer not to state my house address on the public record, if you don't mind. I represent Mrs. Stone and her family. We are not opposed to the commercial use of this tract. We, however, do have grave concerns about the intended use for tract 2. And I just want to confirm that there's no intention at this point to extend public sewer to tract 2. And one of your slides earlier said it was not for development. And so that's where our focus would be. We would appreciate being kept in the loop by the developer and knowing what their intentions were, and also concerned with traffic and how that would work on track 2. But we don't have complete opposition to the rezoning, if you will, of the tract. Go ahead.
Questions for the speaker, or would we like to allow staff to answer the utility easement question first? Commissioner McMahon?
Sure.
Staff, do you have any comment about extending sewer or other utility to track 2?
Yeah, there is a note on the plat. Plat note 4 states, as verbatim, any development on lot 2 requiring public sanitary sewer extension is prohibited.
There you go. Commissioner McMahon.
With that, just for clarification, and I think Mr. Stamper is aware of this, the NFD designation will be filed with the county clerk, and if that needs to be changed, they need to apply for a replat, which will be a public hearing, correct?
Right, yeah. Any condition on this plat would, if approved by council in its form, would need to also be removed by council.
Well, we're relieved on one hand that there will be no connection to public sewer, which will limit its development. On the other hand, the traffic studies or the traffic configuration could force traffic out right next to our property. And so that would continue to be a concern of ours. We would just watch it from there.
Very good. I believe that NFD designation means you cannot even build a driveway, which was part of the previous proposal, right?
I don't think it would prohibit a driveway specifically.
Okay.
Not for development. It's specifically pertaining to anything relating to requiring sanitary sewer.
Gotcha.
I would also add the tract is zoned agriculture, and with that it is severely limited to the potential uses.
All right. Thank you for your service, and appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Anyone else to speak on this subdivision proposal? If not, I would let's have some commissioner discussion. Commissioner McMahon?
Commissioners have no questions or concerns, Mr. Stanton. In the matter of case 2342022, Paris Road and Hinkson Creek final plat, I move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Commissioner, or any discussion on the motion? In that case, Commissioner Carroll, may I please have a roll call?
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson?
Absent.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
We have 8 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you very much. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Moving on to our public hearings, our first case under that heading is case number 007-2023, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of John Giroux, RLT, seeking assignment of R1 permanent zoning subject to annexation of a 9.8-acre tract of land located south of Mexico Gravel Road, approximately 640 feet west of Wyatt Lane. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, I'm pinch hitting for Mr. Palmer this evening, so you get to see my wonderful mug for the next two. This is a permanent zoning request subject to annexation on 9.8 acres as described just east of Wyatt Lane and south of Mexico Gravel Road and west of Lake of the Woods. Requested zoning is R1. We sent out public information postcards on this request on 8-5. There were 31 of them, and then advertised for the public hearing on 10-25 with the same 31 public hearing letters distributed as were with the public info. Here is an oblique aerial which shows the locations of our major road network. You will notice where the dot is, or the stake. Up at the left-hand side of your map, that is the Mexico Gravel Ballinger roundabout. And then on the far southerly portion of the graphic in front of you, you will see the Lake of the Woods intersection with Mexico Gravel, and then the main curve that goes up and converts Mexico Gravel to Route BP. This is a fairly undeveloped portion of the City of Columbia. Most of the property that is to the south, west of this, as well as directly to the south, all lies within Boone County. And then portions of the property on the north side of Mexico Gravel Road are a collection of in-city and out-of-city parcels. The farmette pieces that are immediately to the northeast of this particular property are generally in the county. Main subdivision development that you see immediately to the northwest is inside the city's corporate limits. And that's better described here on the graphic that you have in front of you. Property is currently zoned County RS. The applicant, as I've indicated, is seeking R1 upon annexation. Both are consistent. The two zoning classifications are generally consistent with each other, generally consistent with the surrounding land use designation, which includes agricultural lot designations in the county, as well as some additional, their version of single family, and then R1 zoning to the northwest and west. It is also consistent with the designation within the city's comprehensive plan, which is residential. That does incorporate all types of residential uses, as well as all of our residential zoning classifications. The applicant is seeking this request such that they can build a home on the property and have it connected to the city's sanitary sewer. And they also intend on platting the property in order to be able to obtain the appropriate permits for the sewer connection as well as the home. Pursuant to Policy Resolution 11997A, any property that is contiguous to the City of Columbia's corporate limits must present an annexation petition when they are contiguous to the parcel, and that is the case here today. You will notice the area that's highlighted yellow, or the shaded yellow on the graphic on this slide, indicates where the city boundary is. The sanitary sewer line is directly adjoining the property in the Mexico Gravel Road right-of-way. Therefore, there is no public main extension required. A lateral will be allowed to tap into that system and be able to serve the future single-family house. Access to the property is from Mexico Gravel Road. And when the property is platted, any required upgrades or utility easements that are standard with that platting process will be dedicated on a final plat. Property is served by all city utilities. This property upon annexation will be served jointly by both the city's fire service as well as the Boone County Fire Protection District. Given that it is consistent with the comprehensive plan and it is a requirement of Policy Resolution 11597A, and the zoning is consistent with the surrounding land uses and its context, we're recommending approval. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you for that. Before we go to questions for staff, are there any members of the commission who have received outside information they would like to share with their fellow commissioners at this time? Seeing none, any questions for staff? Seeing none, are there any members of the public that would like to speak on this case? Please come forward, state your name and address for the record. Speak directly into the mic.
Thanks, Commissioners. David Butcher, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. I represent the client, John Giroux. Our objective here is pretty simple. He wants to build him a house. He started his permitting process in the county. The proximity to the city sewer indicates that the county will not give him a permit until he has worked out an arrangement to have city sewer. So in order to annex, we have to come here and establish the zoning that we're going to put on the property. In the county, it's RS zoning, which is exactly the same thing as the RS R1. So I'm here to ask for your permission to get permanent zoning of RS R1.
Any questions for this speaker? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here tonight. Anyone else who would like to speak on this case? Seeing none, Commissioner comments on the case? Commissioner Stanton?
My colleagues are void of any other questions. I'd like to make a motion, Madam Chair.
Please.
As it relates to case 7-2023, I move to approve the requested rezoning to R1 pursuant to annexation.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner McMahon. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have a roll call?
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
What's the vote count?
Oh. The motion carries 8 to approve.
Excellent. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Is there any other business on this case number? Commissioner Carroll.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to remove the combined annexation from the consent agenda so that it so that it won't receive a combined vote on this case along with all others on the calendar for consent agenda at council.
I'll second that.
Commissioner Carroll has moved to remove the combined annexation and zoning case from the consent agenda before City Council. That motion was seconded by Commissioner McMahon. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Lowe?
Can you just clarify again the purpose of removing from the consent agenda?
Commissioner Carroll?
The purpose of removing from the consent agenda is because permanent zoning pending annexation, when it goes to council, the zoning request and the annexation requests, unless removed, separated and removed, go together to the consent agenda, and there is only one vote for the entire consent agenda. I'd like these to be considered separately since this body did not consider or vote on the annexation portion. I do this for clarity to council so that we do not infer any consideration of annexation was approved or studied by this body.
Commissioner Placer?
I am sympathetic to the intentions of this because I do think that these things are conflated. I wonder if this body can make a motion about annexation or the place of annexation on the city council's agenda.
That's not the motion. The motion is this case number, which is usually combined with annexation. And it is in our rules that allows us to do that.
I just wanted to be sure of that.
Yeah.
Since we do not have any jurisdiction over annexation.
Yeah, no, this started a year and a half ago maybe, and we chatted with staff about what we can do because we were getting confusion from members of the public and council as to why we were approving all these annexations, which we don't do.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that.
Any other discussion on this motion? May we please have a roll call?
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
We have 8 to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. Staff, please express our wishes to council. Moving on to our last case of the evening, case number 009-2023, a request by the Columbia Historic Preservation Commission on behalf of the City of Columbia to establish a historic preservation overlay district, including the properties addressed as 910 and 912 East Walnut, and designating both existing structures as historic landmarks. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, this is a case that was previously presented to you earlier this year under case number 77-2022. However, had not been forwarded to the City Council for consideration after a positive recommendation of this body. And we will explain a little bit of why that occurred and why this is before you here momentarily. So this is a property that is on the south side of Walnut Street. It is addressed 910 and 912 East Walnut. Contains roughly 0.07 acres. It is presently a mixed-use parcel that is a residential dwelling unit and a commercial shop space, along with a vacant rear yard that was that is being utilized as a recycling center after its acquisition by the City of Columbia. The request, as indicated, is to have this property designated as a historic preservation overlay parcel in order to preserve the existing structures that are on it, the front to East Walnut, and to have those structures designated as a landmark in accordance with the procedures of our historic preservation provisions that are in Article 3 or 2 of the City Code. There were property owner letters sent out on 10/22. There were 22 of them, and there was a Tribune ad that was placed relating to this particular rezoning request on 10/25. These are the two structures that you have previously seen, 910 and 912 East Walnut. 910 is the structure, if I am not incorrect, on the right-hand side of the photograph, and 912 is on the left. Center of the grid line for addressing is Garth Avenue, so as we move further east, the numbers go up. The property was purchased in 2018 by the city, and it was, as I just indicated, intended to be used. The back portion of the site, which previously had a compactor on it, was intended to be expanded and used for a recycling and collection center in order to address trash collection matters in the downtown on the north side, basically, of Broadway. At the time, the now Ward 1 representative presented information to the City Council in regards to the historic nature of the property prior to its acquisition, and following that, Council at that time sought the HPC's input on the historic value of the property and its necessity for potential preservation. Measures to be enacted while the property was under our ownership. The intent here all along was to be able to market the two existing structures, 910 and 912, for future sale while retaining the rear portion of the property. In order to do that in an effective manner, the property was originally proposed to be divided into two lots. The front portion of the property having the two structures, the rear portion of the property being retained for the solid waste purposes with its alley access. However, due to the existence of some sanitary sewer lines providing service to the existing structures and their inability to be relocated effectively or reconstructed. The two-lot subdivision plat was abandoned, and the property has now been proposed to be platted as a one-lot subdivision, and that revised plat has been submitted for review. And so there's a lot of history behind the sanitary sewer line that actually serves these properties. It is so close to the adjoining property that to replace that sanitary sewer line would have potentially damaged structurally the wall to which it almost was adjoining on the adjacent land, and that is why the platting action had to revert back to a one-lot plat. So this is what the rear of the property looks like today, and this is probably what the property will look like long-term, maybe with a little bit of additional screening, if, in fact, we have purchasers of the property to the north. They obviously will not have a problem of taking their trash to a receptacle since it's right in their rear yard. So, why is this back to you? When the HPC had originally conducted its initial research, there were some inaccuracies in that data that provided some conflicting information that further historical research was able to clarify. So that is why we've got this back before you, because we want to make sure that the public record is clear and the commission understands the full facts behind this. But before we get to the inaccurate information and how we're switching some things around, the HPC's original letter of recommendation that was presented to City Council indicated that the properties were historic, and that is still correct. They do meet the definition. They are over 50 years in age, and they have other particular elements that would be identified as having historical significance. The 910 East Walnut property, that is on the, in this graphic, on your left or right, on the right, on the left, I'm looking at it from the wrong direction. On the left is known as the Cecil Fuller Crane House. It was a family home, and it is unique in the fact that it is one of the few in the core of downtown. And so we have to look at it from the aspect of when you look at landmark or you look at other historic aspects associated to it, it's in the core of downtown. So it is one of the few left here. It was used as a boarding house at one point. It was also student and workforce housing. And the HPC noted that it has particular historical architectural elements that needed regulation in order to preserve that quality or character of house. And then 912 East Walnut, that is that which is on the right-hand side of this graphic, is what is known as the SK Cho home, or Chow. Cho, I think is how it's pronounced. I will not try the first name. I will butcher it. It had higher historical significance, given that SK was the first Korean Mizzou student and graduate. So those facts still have not changed any. However, there were no individual architectural elements in the SK Cho property, 912, that were really identified as being worthy of historic preservation. So those are how the two properties meet the historical significance component, which is the first entry step into the designation process. The HPC originally recommended listing both houses on the National Historic Register of Places prior to their sale, meaning prior to the sale after we had acquired them. However, later in October of 2021, the HPC noted that the two structures would likely not qualify for the high bar standard of the National Historical or National Register of Historic Places that is necessary to have them within that program. So they voted to revise their recommendation that was provided to council instead of seeking NRHP designation, having our local historic preservation district overlay standards applied to them, which do have protections, just not as significant as the national. And have the two structures designated as landmarks. You can have a historic preservation overlay district with multiple landmarks, but you cannot have a historic preservation overlay district without at least one. So having both of them is not going to be the problem being designated that way. There is the proposed regulation of some very significantly named features for the two for the 910 property. And those were all called out in their original 2018 letter to City Council. And then they also have prepared or will have prepared deed restrictions that will mirror those regulated feature standards that would be also recorded to preserve the properties specifically and those features specifically as it is conveyed to a future owner. So the proposed regulation, regulated features for 910 include the exterior facade, its arched lintels and stone sills, the original fireplace, stained glass transom window that is there here on the photograph that you can see above the main window on the ground floor, the French doors that are interior, trims and moldings that are interior, a banister and a mail slot door, all of which we're about to see walking down memory lane with pictures. So here is some of your the interior facade work, the trims and the moldings that are interior to the structure, the fireplace, some additional interior elements, the transom window, the moldings, which I believe, as Mr. McMahon said, these could have been from the Sears Roebuck catalog at that point.
They are.
So the... again, some more of the molding pictures here, of which the board found or the commission found were of value for preserving the criteria, the balustrade within the actual structure itself, the mail slot door. And then the features really at 912, the more the SK's property, which is really doesn't have as many features, of course, it's just the exterior facade, maintaining this proportionality associated with the building itself as we move forward. So the council or the HPC, after identifying the fact that really we were not going to be able to put this on the National Register of Historic Places and initially then revising its recommendation in 21 that it be placed into the HPC, the HPO and have landmark status applied to these structures, they pursued council's authorization to do that in January of this year. That was granted by council. Staff then, at the advice and direction of our law department, prepared appropriate petition forms that are necessary in order to pursue through the designation the process for the properties. The city, being the owner of this, basically was presented them, city manager, HPC before the manager was presented them, though the HPC approved those forms for use. The city prepared their petition in March of 22, which was then presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission previously, and we were requested to prepare the findings of fact. So what Mr. Palmer does as the HPC liaison is he is acting on behalf of the HPC itself. This is not a request that is coming prepared by staff, but prepared by the HPC, as is the requirements of the Unified Development Code. The HPC is charged with bringing forward to the commission for its review requests to designate property and create HPO districts. So we are just the conduit for what is presented. So here's where we have a reversal in some of what was presented in your original hearing under case 77-2022. Deb Shields, our on-call local historian for our HPC, was in the midst of doing additional historical research on the property when this project originally came forward. And the research that was prepared and presented to you initially was that was done generally by the HPC members themselves. But Deb's research determined that the that Cho's ties to the property were very minimal. He lived in 910 for only a short amount of time. 912 was actually more significant property since it was tied to a local physician, William O. Fisher, and that structure was built circa 1930. The HPC was asked to reconfirm their position as it related to the designation of both properties based upon the findings of Ms. Shields. And that was done. The HPC did subsequently reaffirm their recommendation for the HPO and landmark designation on both properties, very similar to what was discussed as part of 77-2022. However, now they are referring to the property that is more significant as 912 and referring to it as the William O. Fisher Building. And that is what now is transcended throughout all of the application documents to ensure that the proper historical significance is attached to the right structure with the right individual. And all of this is a result of basically the added research that was prepared and conducted by Ms. Shields. Hence the reason we don't want to make anything in the public record appear as though we were trying to gloss over the actual facts. We had intended on always bringing this case back to you, but due to the fact that there was enough time lapse, we as a staff decided to just redo the entire application process. So we have voided case 77-2022 in the records, and this recommendation that will be being sought this evening will be the formal recommendation on the designation of these two properties. As I've indicated, Section 29-2.3C6 details 12 standards for the evaluation of a landmark and district petitions. This is the section of the UDC that lays out the HPC's duties and responsibilities. Of those 12 standards, the HPC found consistency with five, and the five there are listed. It has historic character value or interest, and that applies to both properties. It also is identified as significant to Columbians, given the nature of Mr. Cho, as well as Mr. Fisher. We have design materials. Design materials or craftsmanship. That is applied really to 910, which is where the majority of the regulatory standards are applied for protection purposes. And then the unique location or characteristics. As I pointed out earlier, this is one of the last remaining single-family structures in the core of downtown, therefore having that unique characteristic or location. And then the one that is generally met in any instance when the HPC is involved is the fact that both structures are over 50 years in age, which is a minimum requirement generally associated with any type of evaluation that the HPC must do on a property that's sought for demolition or otherwise given consideration for any type of designation of this nature. With that, and given the findings that the Historic Preservation Commission has compiled and those provided by Ms. Shields, the HPC is requesting that the commission take action in the following manner. They approve the proposed zoning map amendment to 910 and 912 East Walnut, which is a single parcel, and have HPO designated on the official zoning map. They are asking that the commission recommend that local landmark status be applied to both of the properties, 910 and 912, and that they also recommend proposed landmark regulations. All of the exterior regulations enumerated in the code or in the presentation here that would apply to both 910 and 912, and all interior elements identified here in this presentation for 910 and that are also identified in the petition for this designation. The proposed deed restrictions to mirror that of the landmark regulations would also be requested as a recommendation of the commission as this is forwarded to City Council. With that, I'll be happy to try to answer any questions that you all may have.
Before we get to questions for staff, did any commissioners receive outside information on this case that they would share with the rest of the commission at this time? Seeing none, questions for staff? Commissioner Lowe.
Mr. Zenner, regarding the HPO, I see it, the subject site documented on the map or the aerial image, let's say, in the designation, petition for designation. I don't see any written description identifying what encompasses the overlay zone.
That would be the deed description, or the platted legal description that we have that will be prepared, that is that, let me put this, that has been prepared by our city surveyor that defines the boundaries of this property as it was acquired by the city. That will actually become part of the ordinance prepared by the legal department for the purposes of designation. So what is defined in the hatched area is meant to represent the exterior boundaries of the parcel as shown on our assessor's maps and our GIS mapping. So it is only to define those particular areas that are within outside of the Walnut Street right-of-way, outside of the public alley right-of-way that runs east-west, and then the two buildings that abut it on either side.
So there's additional language that we didn't receive or that's still being developed?
No, that is probably, because I haven't looked at the application specifically, ma'am. That is probably included within the actual application, the petition that was prepared by our staff, acknowledged by the HPC, and authorized by the city manager. It will have a legal description of this property. It's just we don't include legal descriptions in any other type of project that we present to you. When we do a rezoning request, we don't give you the legal description of that land. So this is no different. This is basically an overlay designation similar to any other rezoning action.
Thank you.
Any further questions for staff? Commissioner McMahon?
A comment and two questions. Just because I'm pretty sure those are Sears moldings, probably 1905, 1910, and added in later. They don't make that stuff anymore, and it's going. Commissioner Lowe's giving me the side eye. It was probably replaced there, like the stair rail, the baluster going up. That's not original. The sewer is in that little bitty alley as we go to the west. Is that where that sanitary sewer is? There's an alley that's like a space between the buildings. Up against the Kroenke property.
No. I'm
You keep getting turned around on this.
I know,
this
I keep getting turned around. The west is to the left-hand side of this graphic.
On this graphic, yes,
and
sir.
For some odd reason to me, if I recall correctly, the sewer, the connection of the sewer is actually on the right-hand side of this graphic.
Oh, so like and underneath or something?
Yes, and so that is part of the problem to not allow this property to be divided because the sewer, there is a, if I'm not incorrect, there is either an elevation change in the property, or it is actually underneath the footer or within the wall area because our sanitary staff had to go out. They had to scope the sewer line to find out if we could line it to preserve it. And it was such an extent that to do anything with that, if we were to do any type of in situ reinforcement or anything else, it was potentially going to compromise that pipe. So if it has to be replaced, it's going to have to be replaced entirely on the parcel, and we do not allow the creation of common collectors. So if we platted a secondary lot here,
are we sure it's not a common collector?
It is not. It is so close to the adjoining property line. Any work within it would require it probably to damage the adjoining property, is what I've been told.
That's where I was going.
Is this a common collector? It's that.
No, it is. I don't believe it is.
There's no restriction on the deed mandating. Okay, I just want to make sure that we weren't.
There will be other challenges associated with the improvement and reuse of these structures, and that is something that will be addressed as a part of the future sale, most likely as contingencies or conditions.
So a lot of contingencies on the. I have one more question. It's for you and Ms. Thompson. How many motions are we doing here?
I think you could do one motion for the designation. If you want to do two for,
I just
designation as HPO and the
I just wanted
status.
To be clear because that's going later on. This is going to be any buyer is going to have a lot of things to look at. That's all.
And again, I'll go back to the point. You
Councilor Thompson.
I think given that these are kind of four separate issues, go ahead and make four separate motions for the sake of clarity.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Zarin, go ahead.
No, I was going to say you can't approve an overlay without having a landmark structure, so keep that in mind. So in the order of operations, what I would probably suggest is that the way that the bullets are laid out here, the four primary bullets, are the way that the motions need to be structured. If you agree to establish the HPO overlay, that's great. Then you can basically designate those landmarks. Actually, I would say it goes the opposite direction. Establish the landmarks, then establish the HPO, please.
2, 1, 3, 4.
Yep.
I have no further questions, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Burns.
From the conversation, I understand, obviously, the city owns this. The city is interested in selling it. HPC is interested in protecting some of these characteristics that we've been discussing. So the city is limiting itself, which is their choice. Does this set any precedent for any other properties? If we create an overlay here, does that open a door to other properties downtown in the MDT for historic overlays?
Historic overlays, we have 4 other historic overlays within the city of Columbia at this point. All of them are self-initiated. We do not have any, if I am correct, any historic districts. We have historic districts, and we have many that are on the National Register of Places that are historic districts. We do not have any historic districts in the nature of how the HPO overlay was envisioned. So I don't think we're setting any precedents here. The city, as a property owner, which is exactly how all of our other ones are, is availing themselves of this particular process, and your observation is very correct. We are openly going in and applying standards on our own land that may impact its ability to be conveyed at a later date. However, this is what council asked the HPC to do, and the HPC is just coming back around through the process and doing what they've been asked. Commission has the authority to advise council how they see appropriate in this matter.
I don't attempt to advise. I just want to make sure that we're not setting a precedent here for something that we don't see right now.
I don't think that it's setting a precedent, since the property owner will either approach HPC or HPC will approach the property owner to designate that property for a purpose. So we're not forcibly going out and applying HPOs on people's property without them agreeing.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Placer.
I am certainly not an expert on this, and I wish somebody from Historic Preservation or Rusty had been here, because the exterior elements of 912 look undistinguished or unhistorical or something. They look like they've been changed over time. The idea that a new owner would have to preserve that exact look seemed a little bit strange, but I will go with it if that's what Historic Preservation says.
Anyone else before I go back to Commissioner Lowe? Commissioner Lowe.
I appreciate the report with the additional due diligence, providing better documentation about the historic value. That's something I at least was looking for previously. To Commissioner Burns' point, a petition to designate a landmark may only be made by the owner of the proposed landmark. A petition to designate a historic district may be made only by owners of at least 60% of the Boone County tax map parcels in the proposed historic district.
Thanks.
Any other commissioner questions for staff? Seeing none, seeing no public to make comments, commissioner comments on this case, I would entertain the first of many motions, and I wrote down the map if you would like assistance, Commissioner. Commissioner McMahon.
I have a comment. I was told, and I'm not speaking out of school or something, that 912, while it's not as significant, if you allowed 912 to be torn down, it would directly affect 910. I think that was their thinking.
Oh, okay. Well, it says no.
If you keep
all exterior,
yeah. If
elements.
You keep the exteriors the same, you don't tear that building down.
True. Yeah, true. I just
They have changed the window over time. That's a new window. If there are no other comments or concerns from my fellow commissioners, I have some motions. In the matter of case 9-2023, I move to make these two properties, 910 and 912 East Walnut, establish a local landmark status for both properties.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call?
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe. Commissioner Lowe.
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Yes.
We have 8 to approve. The motion carries.
That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Any other motions on this case? Commissioner McMahon?
In the matter of case 9-2023, proposing a zoning map amendment for HPO for this property, I move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call?
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Yes.
We have 8 to approve. The motion carries.
That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Are there any other motions on this case? Commissioner McMahon.
The matter of case 9-2023, I move to apply the following proposed landmark regulations, excuse me. All exterior elements of both 910 and 912 as listed in the staff report. It is complete, Mr. Zenner. And the interior elements of 910 is detailed in the petition. I so move to approve both.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Lowe. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have a roll call?
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Yes.
We have 8 votes to approve. The motion carries.
That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Is there any other motion on the case? Commissioner McMahon.
In the matter of 9-20223, I move that the landmark regulations be mirrored in the deed restrictions for this property.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call?
My vote is yes. Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Aye.
We have 8 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Seeing no members of the public to make comments, do we have staff comments?
Yes. When would a meeting be complete without them?
I would be terribly upset.
I know. Well, we have a meeting coming up, and it will be December 8th. It'll be a regular meeting. We will have a work session, and we will have our regular hearing. And I'm going to circle back after we go through what your upcoming projects are for the 8th meeting. We have a number. We will be bringing back a preliminary plat that has been on hold for a while off of Oakland Gravel Road at 3301. This is for a proposed single-family subdivision of an infill parcel of land that includes a public street that will loop around and through the property, so it creates through access from both the west side of the subject tract through to the north. We have a series of public hearings. 1407 Cinnamon Hill Lane, this was a project that was tabled approximately 2 months ago. This is a proposed PD plan for a hotel at the intersection of US 63, the northbound interchange, and Cinnamon Hill Lane, right in the corner next to the Zaxby's restaurant on the north side of Stadium Boulevard. We have another request up the street from the preliminary plat on another infill tract of land at 3612 Oakland Gravel. You will notice this is an R1 to a R2 zoning request. We will get into just the overall aerial and may make a comment or two as it relates to it. We have another rezoning request off of Balboa Lane, which is down on the south end of town. This is to rezone from RMF to PD for the purposes of trying to address a legal nonconforming use that sits on the outer road that used to be adjacent to the fire station, which is now a recycling center, which is used as a storage building, and then to try to segregate the apartment development that is to the back, which is what is in the RMF zoning district at this point, into a new zoning classification that would accommodate those two existing buildings as well as a future new building. 2023 is a case that many of you have probably heard about. If you haven't, be prepared to hear a lot about it at the December 8th meeting. This is the Voluntary Action Center Opportunity Campus. It is a CUP. It is for a temporary shelter. This is directly to the east of Moores Lake and our city power plant. This is a piece of property that we had recently approved a final, it was recently approved with a final plat that did not come through the Planning Commission because it was considered a replat of existing platted property. However, the use of the land requires a conditional use, and this is going to be the first time, I believe in my career that I have been here, that we have actually taken a temporary shelter before this body. So there will probably be a significant amount of public commentary offered as a part of this hearing. If not here, I guarantee you it'll be offered at City Council. And then we have the final action, another public hearing, 704 North William Street. This is a little bit of an oddity, but maybe not so much of an oddity given what is occurring right now as it relates to the replatting of RMF property. This is a downzoning of land from RMF to R2. I don't know the full facts surrounding this particular case. However, it would be probable that due to the fact that we have a legally described deed parcel, the downzoning would allow for the development of the property without any required platting action. That could be seen as a benefit to the adjoining neighborhood, given that often when we replat property, it unlocks additional densities, which have been expressed as a significant concern as it relates to neighborhood character and other impacts within our adjoining central city neighborhoods. So you have an idea of where we're looking at and what properties. The graphic on your left-hand side of the screen is Carpenter's Ridge. That is the name of the preliminary plat. This is an infill property just south of Blue Ridge, as you can see here on the map. The road proposed to be running through the property will actually connect to the street that runs north-south and then loop back around out to Oakland Gravel Road. Our hotel site here is on the graphic on the right-hand side of your screen. The other infill parcel that is up on Oakland Gravel Road just north of Blue Ridge, only four parcels to the north, is another infill site, and this is a rezoning request from R1 to R2. This proposal was originally submitted to us for concept review as a plan zone. And after review, staff evaluated the project. We recommended that the applicant consider this to go to a straight R2 zoning district, given the multifamily that it is adjoining across the street, and the desire of the applicant, at least as expressed to us, to develop cottage-style housing. While that can be accomplished through a plan district, it can also be accomplished through R2 with a Board of Adjustment authorization without the encumberment of additional regulatory processes. And we felt as a staff that if we were going to utilize our code for how the code is currently written, an R2 request was probably appropriate given the other surrounding land use context. This success or failure will probably be based upon neighborhood opposition. And if you'll notice on this graphic, you see Northside Drive towards the top of the graphic. You'll notice that there is a PD triangular or semi-triangular tract of land. The applicant's original response to us was, well, the reason we're requesting PD initially as concept review was because of this particular PD here for a cottage-sized housing project. That particular property was in a hole, and it had other issues associated with it, that the PD probably was appropriate in that location. This particular property that we're dealing with is a fairly level tract of land that can easily be accommodating to any of our regulatory standards, and therefore we felt it more appropriate to utilize our regular process of land use and zoning entitlements to try to achieve the end product. On your right-hand side, you will notice this is the Balboa property, currently zoned RMF in the lower right-hand corner, southwest corner of this property. You will notice this building here. This building was originally a maintenance building for what was a much larger owned singular property of commercial or multifamily development. The buildings that exist outside of the hatched area have been sold off, and this building is no longer used as a maintenance structure. It's being used more for a storage use, which is not allowed in the RMF zoning district. And the PD request is seeking to put a commercial designation on the portion of the property that is improved with this storage building, and then dealing with the remaining portions of the property, if I'm not incorrect, in an MOF zoning classification, which allows for multifamily. We believe that we will have some additional staff review comments as it relates to tying the actual zoning, the proper zoning, or the use list of zoning to the RMF zoning district, given it's surrounded entirely by other residential development. It's early, early in the review process on this at that point, and it is possible this one may be delayed before the December 8th meeting. And then our other project sites that we have for the evening on the 8th, our Voluntary Action Center campus. This is the property that was, as I said, recently replatted, and this will have a conditional use associated with it. So we do have a site plan. We'll have an analysis, conditional use analysis. Many of you may or may not be following the VFW site that the city has recently acquired is up here, if I'm not incorrect, or it's here. That's the VFW property. The VFW property will be used as a for homeless shelter at this point for the winter. And then because of some of the facilities that it has, it may also be used to support the Voluntary Action Opportunity Campus itself, in supporting food and other types of needs as the project is built out over time. Property on the right is your 704 North William Street, the one that is proposed to be downzoned from its current RMF to R2. And again, I believe the basis behind that, without knowing the actual application specifics, is because it has probably been previously described by a deed description, which does qualify as a legal lot if it is R2 or R1. RMF is not included in the definition of legal lot at this point. So it would have to be platted to become a legal lot. With that, that is what we have. While we were discussing the first case on the agenda this evening, I was looking at our city calendar. I have several dates that I would like to propose at this point while we have all commissioners here this evening for you to consider. For supplemental meetings to discuss our short-term rental regulations so we can meet expectations of a end of December meeting with City Council for a check-in and feedback. The dates that I've identified at this point are the 15th of November, which is a Tuesday.
November, you said?
Yes, of November, so that is next Tuesday.
Thinking evening?
It'd be 7 p.m. Or it's not 7 p.m. It would be at, Mr. Stanton, when are you generally available? Because I would like to make these meetings productive for all of us by having you present.
Yeah, 6 usually. I mean, you know, I work sun up, sun down.
Well, we'll do 6 o'clock, and what I'm going to tell you is these meetings will be meal service as we do regular work sessions. So, and I was once taught in a former employment setting that one's mind can only absorb as much as their rear end can handle, and therefore these meetings should not run more probably than an hour and a half to 2 hours, which means if we start at 6, we would end at 8. We would more likely end at 7:30 because about a 90-minute meeting, if we are on task, we should be able to accomplish a lot. Obviously, we sometimes get off track like we did this evening. So the 15th is the first. That is a Tuesday, as I said. And it would be, we could do a 6 o'clock meeting. At that point, it would be tentatively in 1A, 1B. The 22nd of November, and I'm not sure if that conflicts with Ms. Burns's holiday schedule or if it was the week after Thanksgiving. You'll be gone that entire week. Okay, so the 20th.
But if everybody else can, please. I mean,
I'm not available the week of the 21st either.
You won't be? Okay. No. Okay. Will you be available the following week? And that would then be on the 30th. Make sure I can get the 30th. We potentially will have access to 1A, 1B, and that is a Wednesday. I cannot get us in. We potentially could do the 29th and 1A, 1B as well. So the 29th or the 30th at 6 p.m. Would be options. Is that going to conflict with the 29th? I probably want to keep these on Tuesdays. So we have the 15th at 6. We could have the 29th at 6. And then the last date that I have available, and I'm trying to do these before we get to our December 8th meeting, would be December 1st, if I am not incorrect. And that is a Thursday, so that is the week before our meeting. And again, that would be in 1A, 1B.
Do any of those dates not work for the commissioners present?
Can't do November 15th.
Commissioner Carroll cannot do the 15th. I don't know if you could hear that.
In 1A, 1B?
Yeah.
So November 15th, no.
Yeah.
And that was, we just determined that that's not going to work.
Okay. Commissioner McMahon, is there a date?
I would suggest that we go as soon as possible. Just in case we need another day.
Yeah.
The 29th or the...
Well, we could do two, 29th and 30th of November. What I'm looking at on the city calendar, I don't have conflicts.
15th is out.
15th is out.
15th's out. 22nd's out. 29th and 30th. We could do two back-to-back 6 p.m. meetings if you would like. Or we can separate it between the 29th and December 1. Which would be the Thursday prior to our 8th.
I thought he said December 1 also had something.
Oh, okay, that was December 1, yep.
Yeah.
at Dalton 1C?
Salt
1C would work.
Okay. Dalton,
what about the 6th?
Of December?
Mm-hmm.
Dalton 1C on the 6th?
Yeah, 1C.
Okay, so we could do the 6th.
I remember the UDC, as some of the rest
Look,
of you do.
I would rather us pencil them in and cancel them.
We met on Saturdays, too.
Yeah.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
Yes, for UDC.
And we were here till...
And we did longer than an hour and a half, 2 hours. I'd rather do a longer session. I feel like we're hardly getting discussion going.
I know, we're making it through one or two things in an hour and a half.
So let me ask this question, then again, we'll go back to what...
Especially with coffee and snacks.
We will go back to the 29th and the 30th, which is this month, November 29th, November 30th, for two meetings starting at 6 p.m. We'll go 6 to 8 if you would like. We'll do 2 hours. So I don't want to burn you all out. If we want to go 2.5, we can. I can put it in until 9, and if we want to adjourn the meeting at 8:30, that's fine. You have to also I have to keep in mind it's the building security becomes an issue, and I don't want to inconvenience any of our other staff.
Yeah.
So
I think pushing it to 8:30 is reasonable.
We can always
we sit
adjourn
in
early
here
if we...
longer than that.
I completely understand. So 29th and the 30th of November, and then December 1st, which is, that would be in 1C. We'd have a 1C meeting. And then December 6th would be the Tuesday prior to your December 8th meeting, and that would be in 1C as well.
Did we consider November 17th?
I will be out of town.
Okay.
I will be otherwise engaged, so.
We have 4 tentative dates. 3 of them are in a row. We can finish knocking this out?
I believe we can.
The first is a 1C day.
First.
Didn't Dalton say the first was?
The first and the sixth would be 1C.
First would
okay.
Be
where is that
1C.
Located?
Oh, we can.
It's in the hallway.
Right behind you.
Okay.
We'll have AV. We have everything we need in order to conduct the meeting. It's just a slightly smaller, more intimate space. So if you all want to throw things at me, it's easier to reach me.
I think that's perfect.
I was going to say, we've gotten used to our large room. We used to just meet in a third of that space.
That's right.
No. All right, so November 29, November 30th, December 1st, and December 6th are your alternate, are your additional meeting dates, including the December 8th meeting. What I will tell you is, as a report going to City Council, the report deadline for the December 19th meeting of City Council is actually the same day that we meet. It is prior to 5 p.m., however, because it is a report, we do generally have additional latitude provided to us, and those dates are established to allow for other internal review staff to have the opportunity to prepare legislation or other matters. So unless I am told otherwise, the 8th meeting I would like to reserve to ensure that we have an opportunity to spend that time going over the transmission memo that will attach to the ordinance. So the idea here is that the ordinances discussion will be done by December 6th.
I would like to think that we would also have a draft and comments from commissioners on the transmission memo so that the 8th is, this is the final edit. We've all had a chance to do good input. This is a final up-down vote on the 8th.
I think that's a great idea.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, that is, I appreciate your accommodation for this, and I will convey to Mr. Teddy to convey to our city manager that is the timeline in order for us to be able to address issues at hand. The other thing I will say for the purposes of the public, and I believe I made this comment maybe to Ms. Gowie Jones, the stay of enforcement resolution that was passed associated with short-term rentals that was initially instituted as we were going through the final processes of council review has expired, and it was discussed that we needed to reinstitute the stay to address some concerns that the public has expressed to us about the operation of this particular land use. When that was discussed with management staff, it was requested that stay, the ordinance to reestablish the stay not be produced prior to council receiving an ordinance. Typically, when you do any type of stay ordinance or something of that nature, it is normally associated with a pending action. And so the fact that we will have an ordinance in front of the City Council for their consideration, it is deemed more appropriate at that point to then request that they also act on a stay of enforcement, allowing us an opportunity to then fully deal with the outstanding issues of the regulatory process. And it also establishes a start point for the public to become cognizant that there is an ordinance under consideration, which there has been for a year now. However, there also is there's clarity to those that are concerned about the continued operation of these types of uses that we're not doing anything about them. And the stay basically is publicly stating that we realize that they are an issue. However, we're staying enforcement while we're developing these regulations. And it wasn't until council really wanted us to re-engage in this that we put a tremendous amount of thought back into reinstituting that stay, which expired, if I'm not incorrect, January of this year. And we weren't given clear direction if council wanted this to be re-engaged. And of course, now we have been, and that's what we're doing. So.
Very good. Thank you for all of that. Do you want to do commissioner comments or do you want to ask questions?
I have a comment.
Please go on, Commissioner Lowe.
Pursuant to the idea that we're receiving public comments because there is not a clear idea of what's going on or what the timetable is, do we have a spot on the city's webpage that identifies updates on the STR and where potentially we could put our new timeline and let people know?
I can have, we have on our website, on the landing page of community development, we have new and noteworthy topics. Somebody would have to navigate to the community development page. The front page of the website, the landing page of the website is reserved for other purposes. Whenever we are contacted by someone, as I had indicated earlier in work session today, we are advising and directing them to our work session agendas to where they can see everything that the commission has worked on since June of last year. And we are normally always providing them a copy of the draft ordinance that is prepared along with the use table and other relevant information that they need. So,
I did hear you say that, but I think we should be doing something more than waiting for people to contact us with a question. I mean, I think this is...
We can update our new and noteworthy reference page, which I will check to see if it has not been, to provide the appropriate links. So when people are interested, if they're surfing the website, they're going to go there. But I will tell you that the majority of the inquiries are from people that, well, I'm thinking of buying a property. I'd like to establish it as an STR. What are your regulations? And there is a standard response that is being provided that identifies the fact that we are working on a set of standards. You are proceeding at your own risk and a variety of other things. And so what I would tell you is there are people that are hearing about things through the grapevine, most likely, and reacting in the way that was reacted this evening. They don't know where that information is. They're not contacting a department to ask for where the information is. They've just prepared a laundry list of concerns that basically that we have to address. And the way we address that typically is, here's what we have and why I asked the commission this evening, how would you like us to respond to this? Because while, as Ms. Galway-Jones pointed out, a lot of it is intent, I'm fairly confident I have a good grasp of the intent of this body and I can respond to the majority of those questions, but I don't want to speak on your behalf. And unless you tell me you want me to do so, I won't. But we will provide any resident of this community that wants to know what we are working on a copy of our regulations, and they can answer the questions that were posed by those 30 operators by reading the code, because they're all there. Now, there are some things, obviously, who's gonna police this? It's us. That's not in the code, you know, and all of the other administrative things that we still have to deal with. That's not in the code, and those are the types of questions that we do have to provide answers toward, because I think that that's the uncertainty of what the regulation will be is what's got everybody wound up. They don't know what to expect so they could properly prepare or make a business decision.
Commissioner Burns.
Thank you. I just had a procedure question. When we previously had, before cases came, we asked about ex parte communication, and now the terminology has been changed to outside information.
It's my belief that ex parte only refers to judges. We are not a judicial body.
Okay. If I could just make a comment, I think that this might be relevant, particularly with short-term rental. I think that additional language was added so that a commission member had the opportunity to say if they'd had, and maybe ex parte is the wrong word, but additional conversations or outside conversations and could disclose those. And I think that's really important. We have been encouraged in the past by legal not to have additional outside conversations, particularly about a case that's pending that's been advertised. And I think we all are respectful of that. But I guess outside information doesn't exactly convey.
I can use the word conversation or communication if that.
Yeah. What terminology? And perhaps your lawyer brain can come up with something. What conversations have you had outside conversations pertaining to this case? Because I do think it's important that we all, that the public knows that, no, we haven't. We haven't been talking as a commissioner to the public.
And I believe the former language was from City Council. So maybe just confirming vocabulary.
Hi, Jose, who came, I think.
It was Jose, yeah.
Any other commissioner comments?
I did have a question.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Commissioner Kale, I did write your name down. I just forgot to look him down.
Sarah was asking about how we can reach the public. I was wondering if we could have a spot on the Be Heard Columbia page that they're using for public outreach recently. Would that be relevant? Or do we only do that once it's in public input, public hearing stages?
I'll have to confer with our communications office. My initial reaction to that is that should be a tool utilized after we have a draft that is put out for public inspection.
Okay.
I think trying to manage or encourage, and I think this was Ms. Lowe's point during work session, to encourage comments at this point when we're not even done drafting the regulation the way that we would like to present it to City Council may just create greater confusion. And again, that's part of what our job is as staff, to indicate to them that this is a moving target at this point. There will be a time and a place for you to be able to submit written or spoken comments on the ordinance. And it's not now. We're trying to work through this. This is in the response I sent today in regards to the 30 operators. Our work sessions have historically not been open to engaging the general public for the purposes of ensuring that we have an opportunity to communicate between staff and the commission. If we invite guests in, that's one thing, because you are inviting guests in for the purposes of a presentation. But what would have derailed this evening's conversation probably even more would have been people offering comments on things that were jumping all over the ordinance that we were covering and not keeping us focused on the topic at hand, and hence the reason why you review an agenda for a work session, you'll notice there is no public comment on that agenda. That is a very purposeful process. It's because we're utilizing it as an opportunity for staff and the commission to discuss topics. I also stated if those individuals wanted to make public comment on any item that the commission is working on or considering, they can do that so under the public input session of your regular meeting. As you see, they're not here.
So it sounds like what you're saying is the section of the website Commissioner Carroll suggested is for public input specifically, not for updating the public.
I would suggest that's correct. Now, what I will confirm, though, is that we can update the public. We have other means by which we can update the public. We have Nextdoor, which we manage. We have a number of listservs to neighborhood associations that we manage. There are other opportunities for us to send out distribution. And part of the challenge we have with text amendments, for example, like drive-throughs, we were not as diligent as we probably could have been in getting that topic out early enough for others to have comment on it that may have influenced what was produced. And so now there is a council tracker that is requesting that when we are prepared to have the Planning Commission have its public hearing, we are to notify a very specific list of affected residents such that they basically can tell us what problem they have with drive-thrus next to their homes. And that may generate some responses. It may generate none, but that's a clear cue to me that our council desires that we ensure that the public has been availed of every action that is going on that may impact them, either the development community or a private resident, and they are concerned that those individuals aren't having an opportunity to express anything during a public hearing. So we will comply with that. And that's, I think, how we need to approach the same topic. That is one reason why we will have a public inspection period. We will not just have public information meetings before we do a public hearing. We will have a defined public inspection period like any other federal regulation has when it comes up for amendment. It'll be 30 days, most likely, at a minimum, after which we will compile the comments into a spreadsheet, sit back down in a work session, and say, here's how all of them are done. And Ms. Lowe is correct. That was an absolute laborious task for us, but it was not a demand, it was a request of City Council. They wanted to know what the public had to say, and that was the way we identified doing it. Some things that are tried and true, we just need to continue to repeat, wash and repeat. So that's one of them. I'm open to suggestions, and I want to have as much dialogue, but I also want to make sure that that dialogue is contained in the right buckets at this period of time.
I would also point out that we have had a member from the STR community who attended almost every work session, and none of the 30 who felt the need to send us a letter have been to a single one before tonight. So it's not as if the public hasn't had the opportunity to come and listen to our discussion, which I understand is not like this one is, where it's fully transcribed. But if you actually want to know what we're thinking, it's posted that this is what we're working on, and you can come and listen. And we welcome that. Is there any other commissioner comment? Commissioner McMahon?
A general comment that we're here to represent all 130,000 cities of Columbia, citizens of Columbia, not just the concerns of a narrow, perhaps externally motivated small group.
All right, Commissioner Lowe.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Lowe, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. We are adjourned.